This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. If you were to write a headline about the movie Gravity, it would be that after 3 weeks, Houston, we have a blockbuster.
Houston, Explorer, copy.
Explorer, Dr. Stone requesting faster transport to Bay Area. Explorer, do you copy?
Explorer, permission to retrieve Dr. Stone.
Your go, Guam. Houston, this is Explorer, copy.
All right.
We've lost Houston. We've lost Houston.
Not only is the movie Gravity incredibly exciting and suspenseful, but it also boasts some of the best special effects I've ever seen in a movie theater. And if you have enjoyed it, you can thank a lot of people, from George Clooney to Sandra Bullock to the director Alfonso Cuarón, and probably a little bit of the credit has to go to my next guest. His name is Dr. Kevin Grazier. He's a planetary scientist who worked as a science advisor on Gravity, as well as on TV shows like Battlestar Galactica and Falling Sky. Dr. Grazier spent 15 years at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory and has a book due next year called Hollyweird Science. Kevin, welcome to America Weekend.
Good morning, and thank you.
It's my pleasure. As the science advisor for an effort like this, at what point in the process do you get to see the script?
Yeah, it depends on the movie, obviously, but in this particular instance, I saw it pretty early on. The Cuarones, and I say that plural because Jonas co-wrote the screenplay, that was Alfonso's son. They contacted the JPL Public Information Office, and knowing that I'd done quite a bit of consulting, you know, for the industry, they contacted me, and I met them at a local hotel, the Chateau Marmont, and met them in the lounge, and we talked about their vision for the project, and that night, Warner sent me a script. It was an early version. It's gotten better. It got better afterwards, but it was really early in the process.
Were there times where you looked at that early script, and you looked at them and said, oh, no.
They had done a lot of homework. I mean, there are some things that, there were issues with it from a technical standpoint that they knew. Alfonso had told me, you know, early in the conversation that he was motivated to do something like this because they'd just seen the Hubble 3D IMAX film, you know, the last servicing mission of, you know, STS-125. And he wanted to sort of recreate the beauty and awe and danger of space travel. And, you know, he knew from the word go, for example, that you can't get to the International Space Station from an orbit that services the Hubble, and didn't care. Because if you don't give your characters something to shoot for, a tangible goal, then what you have is a very different film.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was probably the biggest 900-pound gorilla in the room. But apart from that, they had done their homework, and they were really keen on continuing to do their homework.
I'm curious, because you have worked at JPL for so long, you must know some astronauts. Were you able to talk to them to get help on plot points or how an astronaut would move or act at certain points that you could then pass on to Alfonso?
You know, I did. At the time, I was working half-time on Cassini and half-time on the Constellation program, which was you know, the program that was supposed to return humans to the moon and then Mars. And they were so detail-oriented. They were asking me about which direction hatches open, direction, all sorts of things aboard ISS and the shuttle that I just couldn't answer. And I had just met Andy Thomas, who was an astronaut, a week prior. I'd been in Houston for a week. So I said, hey, contact Andy. And they started asking Andy about all the details they needed to know. And then they started into the Soyuz capsule. And he said, whoa, I've never been on a Soyuz in my life. But my wife's going up on a Soyuz in a week, because his wife is Shannon Walker. And between us and then later Katie Coleman spoke to Ms. Bullock about what it's like to be in space. So, yeah, it was a total tag team effort.
And so they could say, here's what the Soyuz looks like inside, here's what you would do, here's how it would work, et cetera.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Did you get to, I know that most of the movie is all CGI, that much of what we see on the screen, other than Sandra Bullock's amazing performance and George Clooney's face through a visor, the rest of it is all computer generated. Did you ever get to go to the set and work with either of those stars?
I didn't. really no point in this particular instance. Sometimes on some of the shows I've worked on, I've dealt with the talent, but in this case, there really wasn't any point. My involvement was early and tense and brief. I mean, it was early on in the writing, a lot of work for a couple days, and then they got what they needed, and they moved on to the next phase of their job.
Are you putting your reputation on the line as a science advisor when you do a movie like this and then other scientists come along and nitpick?
Yes and no. And I say yes and no because there's kind of a misapprehension that science advisors are science copy editors and that we have complete dictatorial say over the science, and we don't.
You don't? You don't get to tell these stars and this director, hey, you have to make my movie!
No, I'm afraid not. And, you know, science serves the story, not the other way around. We're not doing documentaries. And so you make it as right as you possibly can, and you live with that.
Do you nitpick science movies yourself if you go see something in sci-fi?
It depends. As a rule, no. I mean, I go for the journey like everyone else. And I suspend disbelief like everyone else. But, you know, if the science is egregiously bad and doesn't have to be, that just, that bugs me. It doesn't have to be part that when it gets to be upsetting.
I do have to ask you about one point that somebody raised with me after they saw it, because I've recommended this movie to as many people as I can. I tell them, see it on the largest screen you possibly can. You don't want to wait and stream this on Netflix on your iPad. You have to be enveloped by the movie the way Sandra Bullock is enveloped by space. But a friend of mine who went on that recommendation said, well, wait a second. Sandra Bullock's character is an MD. Why is she doing repair work on the Hubble telescope at the beginning of this movie?
Actually, it's a quick, almost a throwaway line, but they said that she had developed a medical imaging system and the implication that has astronomical applications, and that she gets to be the person to install it. You know, there's actually a precedent for that. There's a type of astronaut called a payload specialist, and they are usually an expert on one type of instrumentation or one type of satellite, and usually not employed by NASA or the military, usually employed by one of the aerospace firms or something like that. So there's precedent for her title and her role on that mission.
Yeah, there are civilians going into space, or there were civilians going into space all the time during the shuttle years.
There were,
exactly.
Yeah, agreed. For example, on the Challenger mission, one of the victims of the Challenger, Greg Jarvis, worked for, at the time, Hughes Space and Communication. He was a payload specialist.
So give me an idea, Kevin, of the sort of thing that Alfonso would turn to you and say, for instance, okay, we have this shot and the Earth is in the background. Would you tell him as a planetary scientist yourself, okay, well, here's what they should see and here's what that should look like, et cetera?
That kind of thing, they already had down pat by the time they met me. Like I said, they were the Quarones were motivated by the Hubble IMAX film of the last servicing mission, and so they already had that visual in mind, what they wanted to show and how they wanted it to look. I didn't need to help them. In fact, really, since I'd done spacecraft operations for several years at the point, most of what I consulted on was dialogue.
Dialogue between Clooney and Bullock, mostly.
Clooney and Bullock, or Clooney, the astronauts and Explorer in Houston, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you a non-gravity question here, because I mentioned in my introduction that you've worked on things like Battlestar Galactica and Falling Skies and a bunch of other TV shows. Which do you prefer, TV or movies?
I'm more of a TV person, and I mean, I'm enjoying Gravity. I'm enjoying the ride. It's a phenomenal blast. But movies, it's quick. You get in, you get out, and you're done. In TV, you're a team. You work with these people day in and day out, and it's just more of a chance to bond and form a teamwork environment, and I think I prefer that.
And then it's episode after episode after episode, hopefully, right?
It is. Currently now I'm working on season 2 of Defiance and loving that. Love that show.
Please tell me that nobody associated with Gravity has come to you and said, we're thinking about doing a sequel.
No. No one has said that. And I'm kind of hoping this one stands alone.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it is exactly that kind of movie. And I just checked the box office numbers. It's up to something like $250 million worldwide so far. Not bad for a budget of $100 million to start with.
Yeah, I, I don't doubt it. I mean, I predicted before it came out that you'd see, apart from the stream of technical noms it's going to get, I think you're going to see Best Director, Best Picture, Best Actress, and maybe Best Actor.
Well, I don't know about Clooney, but I think Bullock will definitely be up there. And I appreciate your work on it, Kevin. And thanks so much for joining me here today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Kevin Grazier, science advisor for the smash movie Gravity, here with Paul Harris on America Weekend.